Welcome to the Gospel Rain podcast, part of the teaching ministry of Dr. Matt Brown and Dr. Micah Carter. We hope you will find gospel-centered answers to your questions about theology and the Christian life. And now, we welcome you to the Gospel Rain conversation.
Welcome back to the Gospel Rain podcast. It's great to be back in the saddle with Matt. We've recorded a couple recent episodes after a summer hiatus, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And man, it's been a busy summer, a great summer, but so good to be back with you, Matt, kind of thinking through, you know, some topics we can jump into and, you know, increase our learning, increase our thoughts toward a Godward direction. And, you know, we talk about a lot of different things that are typically church-related and theological in orientation. We don't always jump into philosophical type stuff, but
right.
Today's episode, we're going to do that for our listeners. And it's relevant for Christianity. It's relevant for theology and those kind of things. But we want to kind of push back the curtain a little bit and do some analysis on what is a worldview. And, you know, most time you hear this in a philosophy class or some kind of, you know, other area, because we're going to be dealing with some areas of thought and some comprehensive kind of buckets that when you start breaking down what people believe and what they think, oftentimes what stands behind it is a worldview.
Right.
And so, you know, let's do that today. And if we can just kind of jump right into our topic, you know, let's define a little bit what a worldview is. And then I think we've got some questions that all worldviews have to wrestle with and typically provide an answer whether they realize they do it or not. And then I think we're gonna talk about three or four specific worldviews that you know, most people are gonna hold to one of these somewhere. So jump us off into this about what is a worldview and what are we talking about?
Well, simply put, it's your view of the world. A worldview is your view of the world. Everybody has one. You may not know what it is, may not be able to define it, but everybody has one. Everybody looks at the world through a certain lens, a certain set of beliefs, a certain set of things that would be constant or absolute to you, things that you believe in. Some people would say that these are convictions. As we've talked about before, you know, a conviction may not be, a belief is something that you hold, a conviction is something that holds you, right? Mm-hmm. Something that grips you. And everybody has these convictions. And so we'll get into what some of these worldviews are based on. But to your point a second ago, every worldview has to be able to answer some questions, basic questions about life, and your view of the world will automatically answer those for you. And the way that you approach those questions is then going to determine how you live your life. All right, everybody lives on the basis of what they believe.
Yeah.
Okay. You can say you believe something all day long, but your life will reflect whether or not you truly believe it.
Right.
We would even say, with you know, understanding Christian principles, you can say you believe in God all day long, but the way that you live will reflect whether or not you believe that.
Yeah. Okay? Very, very good. Yeah.
And whether you have faith in Christ, your life is going to reflect that if you believe that actually is true. So, a worldview is everybody's way of looking at the world. James Sire wrote a book, and I'm sure you read this in seminary, so did I. It's a great book. It's called The Universe Next Door.
And, yeah, great book.
Book on worldviews. Mm-hmm. And this was sort of one of my introductions to worldview type stuff.
Right.
We didn't do much of that in Bible college. Mm-hmm. But you get into seminary, we had to start thinking through philosophically some of these worldviews. And so it's a great book. And for those who are looking for, you know, a little bit of a, I don't know, evaluation of different worldviews and how worldviews work and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, here's why this is relevant, too, is because you and I, we pastor in a context where pretty much everybody shares the same worldview, the same kind of perspective on things in life. But when you get outside of the South, when you get outside of the kind of the bubble of the church even, and you start talking to people that are saying things about the world, saying things about human beings, et cetera, and you're kind of sitting there scratching your head like, what in the world are you talking about?
Where'd you get that from?
Let me give you an example. So we were watching this, Jerry Seinfeld's got this show on Netflix called Getting Coffee in Cars with Comedians or something like that.
Okay.
Really funny show.
I saw the first episode of that. Yeah. I know. You know,
it's got all these famous comedians and stuff drinking coffee, talking about basically nothing. It's Seinfeld 2.0 is what it is. But it's so great. Well, he had an episode with Jim Carrey. And if you have followed
that one,
if you follow Jim Carrey at all, you'll realize that, man, you would think he's just falling off the deep end. And I mean, so for example, this waitress comes up and she tells him her name, and he's like, well, you're not a Molly. Yeah, that doesn't fit you at all. You'll figure it out later. But he was presenting to her, I guess, statements about what he perceived to be real.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just bizarre. It was really bizarre. But he's got a worldview. And Seinfeld's sitting there thinking, dude, you're a nut.
Yep.
Girl says her name's Molly. You know, so, but he has shifted over time in kind of his perspective on things. So I think this is a relevant question for our listeners, in the sense that a lot of times you'll come up on somebody that disagrees with you about something. And one of the factors, a major factor, whether it's spoken or unspoken, is because they're viewing the world differently.
Yeah. And everybody's got these things. Everybody's got these. And what some have called, like James Sire called, a set of presuppositions. It's a big word, but a presupposition is these are tenets or things that you hold to be true that dictate the way that you operate.
Yeah.
And you have, so you all of us have these. You can't say that you don't have them. Mm-hmm. If you say you don't have any presuppositions, then you're operating off of the presupposition that presuppositions don't exist. Mm-hmm. So that is already a presupposition. So you can't say that you don't have that. Everybody's got these. And these are either consciously or subconsciously, as he says, about the basic makeup of the world, the way the world is made up, and what we do and how we do it and how we live and how we approach life and where do we come from and all those other kind of things. So the worldview is going to basically give you some answers.
Okay, this may be a dumb question, and you may be getting this to a little bit later in our conversation, but sounds like a dumb question. But where do we get or develop these presuppositions? Is it culturally determined? Is it from our parents? Is it environment? Is it religion? You know what I'm saying? Is like, I mean, I know, because like I said, we're surrounded by people that think a lot like us. Mm-hmm. But you go to New York City and it's going to be really different. You go to Tokyo or Mumbai, and we're talking about really different ways to view everything. So
The answer to all those questions is yes.
Mm-hmm.
We get presuppositions from all those places, the way that we were raised, things that we've heard, things that we have been taught before in school.
Stuff that feels right.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff. I mean, we get them from everywhere. So our world is constantly being, our philosophy, when you say it this way, our philosophy is always being constructed, and our presuppositions are always being set and challenged. So we grow up with the presupposition that there is a God, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we get these presuppositions from all over the place. Now, I would also say that some of the presuppositions that we have are hardwired into us. In other words, we are clearly, according to the Bible, we are made in the image of God. And Paul says in Romans chapter 1 and 2 that means we all know that there is a God.
Mm-hmm.
That was hardwired into us. So that's a presupposition that we have, and not everybody says they have that presupposition. There are a lot of people who reject an idea of God.
Right.
But we know, based on Revelation, that everybody at least does have that presupposition to begin with. But as Paul says, the evil one twists that truth and suppresses that truth, and then everybody's, you know, people are okay with believing a lie. But anyway, we come up with presuppositions all through our world. They're being constructed, and they're being challenged, and they're being renewed, and we're having to step back and go, okay, my presupposition about this may be wrong, and I need to reevaluate that, come up with a new presupposition. We don't say that in those terms, but we're always doing that. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the way the world works, because we constantly come in contact with other attitudes, other facts that we don't have. And so all these things, so our presuppositions are always being challenged and being renewed or reconstructed.
Yeah, that's helpful, because, you know, I'm one of the questions that was kind of rolling through my mind as we were thinking about doing this episode was, you know, can someone's worldview change over time? Mm-hmm. You know, how much does the idea of truth factor into some of this, you know, because as we're going to talk about in just a minute, even what is truth is debated in philosophical terms and worldview analysis and those kind of things, what is true? It's like Francis Schaeffer used to talk about true truth, you know?
Right.
And I think that's an interesting phrase, because people are presenting what they believe to be truth their perspective.
That's right.
But there's a true truth, and I think we're all trying to get at that.
Yeah. And everybody wants to live according to truth.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to live according to a lie. Nobody would want to do that intentionally and live according to a lie. Everybody wants to live according to truth. It's just defining what that truth is the problem. And we would even say as Christians that we recognize that problem. Mm-hmm. We recognize that, yet we believe Christianity answers the questions as to what is true and what's not true. But we understand, too, that we live in a context, in a culture, where not everybody's going to agree with that. Everybody's going to have a different truth. And so we've got to be willing to say, yes, I believe the Bible is true, and I believe that I have answers for your worldview, and I can answer to your worldview. And so we just have to sort of understand that we are living in that culture, and we have been for a long time, living in a culture where not everybody believes what we believe as Christians.
Right.
Our worldviews are going to be challenged.
Right.
And let me say, too, that specifically we're living in a culture now where the worldview of our young people is not just going to be accepted like it once was.
Yeah.
And I've said before to my folks here, when I was in high school, I was a Christian. Mm-hmm. I was an outspoken Christian. Everybody knew that I was a Christian. Nobody challenged me on that.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was okay with that. They understood I wasn't going to be at the party, and I wasn't going to be participating in some of these other things that they might have been, that kind of stuff, which was cool. And they accepted that. They didn't challenge me. Mm-hmm. It's not so much that way anymore. In a culture now, which is only 25 years later, whatever it is, since I graduated high school, I don't remember how many years that was, but however long that's been, now young people are being challenged on their worldview,
right.
And people are coming at them to say, why do you believe that way? Mm-hmm. And what is the basis for your belief? And which are good questions.
Yes.
It's just a lot of times because we've grown up with certain presuppositions, we've never been caused to be challenged or to question those or to understand the reality. Is it really true or is it not?
And that can be a really positive thing for Christians today if we understand what Peter says, that we need to be prepared to present an answer for the hope that is within us.
That's exactly right.
So we've got glasses through which we see the world like everybody else. When challenged, why do you believe that way? Here we go. We have an opportunity to discuss a worldview issue and a lot of different things.
And hopefully what we do in the next few minutes will at least help people be able to do that and understand there are different ways of looking at the world.
Yeah.
And that's okay. We just need to be willing to accept that and then give an answer to it.
Okay, so there are probably a handful of questions that might help us kind of unearth or reveal somebody's worldview, or at least get in a framework of questions that every perspective has to have some kind of answer for, right?
Right.
All right, so walk us through some of these questions that might, you know, set the stage for thinking through a worldview that everybody, you got to have an answer for these questions.
Yeah, and one of the questions is, why is there something rather than nothing?
Okay.
All right. Okay. And that's that will sort of make your mind do some flips philosophically. Why is there something rather than nothing? But every worldview will have to answer that question.
Yeah.
In other words, we see things. We're here. We're in a world. There's a universe. There's an earth.
Yeah.
Why is there something here? Why is it just nothing?
Yeah.
And so I know that for some people that may sound like a useless question to have to ask, but when you begin to compare worldviews, the Christian worldview is going to answer very specifically to that question, but so are the other worldviews.
Right.
They're going to have to answer that question. Why? And we people have asked that same type question a lot in a way like, why are we here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why are we here? Why is just nothing here?
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't nothing
why is something
here?
Here?
Why is something here? And why am I here?
Yeah.
And so every worldview is going to answer that question.
And it ranges, like you're saying, between God created it or something created it to it's always existed. We don't know why it's here. Can't push back to it. It's eternal, and here we are.
That's right. Know? And therefore, your worldview will come from that.
Okay.
Yeah. So another question might be, how do you explain human nature? How do you explain that we exist?
Yeah.
How do you explain that we have emotions? How do you explain that we have a mind to think? How do you explain that we have impulses?
Mm-hmm.
How do you explain our interest in making laws and rules, and how do you explain human nature for what it is?
Yeah.
And again, a Christian worldview has a has an answer to that, but so do the other worldviews. They will say it, you know, we evolved, and or whatever your answer might be will come from the way you view the world.
Yeah. What is a human? Why is a human? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Human nature. Okay.
And so, what about another question? Might be, how do you know that you know? How do you know that you know anything?
The Bible.
That's
the book for me.
That's the book for me. but you know, this goes back to you know, questions that were asked and answered in ancient philosophy for would it be you know, I think, therefore I am. And you go back to the philosophers like Thomas Aquinas and other people who were asking questions like this and trying to figure out the basis for the world and the basis for my thinking. And, you know, am I even here? People were asking that question. Am I even really here? I mean, I think I am. I think I'm here. I think the world around, but it could be an illusion. I may not even be here. And so that, you know, you get thoughts like, I think, therefore I am. And so anyway, but it really is a good question. How do you know that you know anything?
Let's break that down, because this is a really huge question in the history of philosophy. Because you've got someone like Plato. Everybody's heard of Plato, right? Mm-hmm. Well, he had this thing called a cave, you know, where there's a fire burning in there and everybody's looking at the wall. And shadows are being cast on the wall from things, and they think the shadows are real. When the shadow's not real, the thing behind them is real, but they can't see it because all they see is the thing on the cave. And then you fast forward a bunch of time to someone like Immanuel Kant. So you have the Enlightenment, where he says what you just see is observable stuff, but the real stuff is out there somewhere. Its true form is out there. He's kind of building off of Plato.
Right.
And so the only thing you can know is what the senses give you: taste, touch, sight, smell, and empirical data, which spawned the whole scientific revolution that we're still, you know, stuck in right now, trying to answer these worldview questions because of what happened 400 years ago, 500 years ago.
So philosophers from way back, ancient times, even before Jesus and all that, people were asking and trying to answer these questions because they knew that they were basic to life. They were basic to functioning in this world is to be able to answer these questions. Another question would be, what happens to a person at death? Mm. Every worldview has to deal with that, because if you believe that you're alive and that you believe that you are going to die, then what then? What happens after that? Mm-hmm. And some people say, well, I don't have to answer that question. Well, you may not think you have to answer that question, but whether you think you have to answer it or not, you do believe something.
Yeah.
Do you believe that's just it? Maybe it's just over. You go to the ground, you turn back into dust, and that is it. There is nothing on the other side. There's no spiritual realm out there. There's nothing left for you. Mm-hmm. Then that is your worldview. Mm-hmm. That is a worldview. And that is one of the major worldviews, is that nothing happens. That's just the end.
Yep. Or reincarnation, or
exactly
heaven or hell or something.
That's right. Yeah. But you need to ask and answer the question, what's going to happen at death?
Okay.
Another one is, how do you determine what's right and what's wrong?
Mm.
All right, we're all here, and we all have, you know, systems of laws and rules, those kind of things. But what is the basis for those laws?
Yeah.
A law will say, don't do this because it's wrong. What's your basis for saying that?
That's right.
What makes that wrong?
Yeah.
Well, your worldview is gonna be the way that you will define what is right and what is wrong.
Yes.
Something had to be the standard of right and wrong, whether that be your own opinion, whether that be a higher power, whether that be revelation from God, whether that be whatever that is. So your justification for right and wrong is going to come from your world.
That's a real relevant question, because you think about, for example, MMA fighting. Mm-hmm. And you got two men in the ring, and they're beating the crud out of each other, and you don't feel a visceral response like something's morally wrong. But if a man and a woman were in the ring, and he's beating the crud out of a woman, everybody's up in arms because this is wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong.
Right.
Well, why is it wrong? According to whose standard of wrong?
That's right.
And this applies to all these moral questions, don't they? Like abortion.
That's exactly right.
War and so many different things that we're trying to. Everybody has an opinion. They got a worldview perspective.
Right.
But what's the standard of morality?
And something as simple as somebody breaking into your house to steal something.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that wrong?
Yeah.
Well, it's wrong.
Yeah.
Why? Why is that wrong? What would cause you to say that wrong? Is it because you feel like you've been, you know, somebody has mistreated you? well, that's a personal opinion. That's a personal feeling that something is wrong, but that is still your basis for wrong, all right? So everybody has a basis for wrong and right.
That's right.
But your worldview needs to be able to answer that question.
Okay.
And then another one is, what's the meaning of history? Mm. You go back, we look back and read in history, what is the meaning, or is there a meaning of all that? So there are tons of questions that worldviews need answered, and so I've given you a whole handful of them. But to simplify, mm-hmm. let me give you three.
Okay.
This sort of simplifies the whole worldview issue. Now, there's more to it than this, but just the simplification. Number one, where did we come from, which we talked about a second ago.
Okay.
Number two, what's gone wrong with the world? Everybody agrees we don't all get along.
Right.
All right. Something's wrong with us, because every worldview out there operates on the assumption that we can fix this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mm-hmm. Something can fix it, all right? But mm-hmm. something has gone wrong with the world. We're killing each other.
Environment's jacked up.
Exactly.
Global warming.
We shouldn't be that way. Mm-hmm. And then the third question is, what can we do to fix it?
Okay,
so every worldview, oversimplification, is going to have to try to answer those three things as sort of has been espoused by some other philosophers.
So those are the questions. Those are good, man. Those are really, really helpful. And we've got to wrestle with those. And we already have answers, presuppositions that kind of lean us in one direction or another. But
Right.
do you think there are some truths, some kind of some bedrock truths that everybody holds, whether or not it's articulated? I mean, we've got to come to some standard of truth, you know what I'm saying, that gets at some of these questions, even if people are fudging on it, or denying it, or not even cognizant of it. But give us some inescapable truths that everybody, here we are, and we hold this. Yeah. We all hold this.
Yeah, some people, and there are probably a lot of them, a lot of the truths that we could boil things down to, and some will even deny these things. One might be that everybody has faith.
Mm.
Everybody operates on the basis of faith somehow, whether it be a faith in God or whether it be a faith in something. We're all operating on the basis of faith, and we do it all the time. Mm-hmm. I operate on the basis of faith when I drive down the interstate. I have faith that my car is going to stay all four wheels on the ground, mm-hmm. that I'm not going to float. Okay, I have faith in gravity. Mm-hmm. I know that it exists. I'm going to operate on the basis of that. Mm-hmm. I can't see gravity, but I can see the results of it, and I have faith that it's always going to operate the same way. Or else I wouldn't drive a car if I thought we might float. If some people might float and other people might, it'd be chaos. We wouldn't know. We wouldn't get from point A to point B. I have faith, and I operate on the basis of that faith. I turn a light switch on in my room or my office. I have faith that it's going to come on. Mm-hmm. I have faith that I can't explain electricity. My family knows I hate dealing with electricity because I'm scared of it, and I don't want to die. So anyway, but I just have faith that electricity is going to operate that way. So all kinds of things like that, but we all operate on the basis of faith. Everybody believes in something that they cannot see or explain.
Right,
everybody does.
Yeah. That's good.
All right. Even if you say you don't believe in a God.
Yeah, even an atheist has faith in themselves
and
in their own knowledge.
Yeah, and he has faith that there is not a God.
Yeah.
He operates on the basis of his faith.
It's not certainty.
That there's not a God there.
Yeah.
Another thing, it could be that everybody, and this is big in our culture right now, has been for a number of decades, especially with the rise of postmodernism and that kind of stuff years ago, is that one inescapable truth may be that all people operate on the basis of absolute truth.
Are you absolutely sure?
And that's exactly right. and that's that's the thing, is that people say, even, you know, especially in our culture for the last number of decades, well, there is no absolute truth. Well, are you sure?
That statement is an absolute truth.
It's an absolute truth, right? So everybody operates on that basis, that there is an absolute truth. Now, you might say you deny it, but the way that you live and the way that you operate says the opposite.
Right.
You can deny absolute truth all day long, but you live with absolute truth.
Yeah,
you actually do believe in it.
Yeah.
And let me maybe a last one. There's bunches
many,
of others,
yeah.
I'm sure, but another one might be that, and again, some people have rejected this in the past, that something does exist. We exist. We are here.
Yeah.
We we are here. Sort of like the, I don't know, what Dr. Seuss story is that. I've watched it with my kids 100 times, and you got the big elephant,
yes,
and the yep, little bitty people. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of the movie.
I can't either, man.
So anyway, he can't see them, and nobody can see them. But when they finally get contact with each other, you can hear them saying, "We are here, we are here, we're here." And
nobody believes that.
And
elephant.
Nobody believes it, but the elephant, right? What's the name of that? I forgot it. It'll come to me. Somebody will reply to us on social media. I can't believe you're an idiot and you don't know that. But we are here. It's sort of this idea that we are here. Mm-hmm. We all believe that we're here. But that's a truth that we have. Now, some people have rejected that in the past and said, "No, we're just an illusion.
Yeah.
This is all a figment of our imagination." But again, the question has to be asked, where'd you get the imagination then?
Yeah, I was in a doctoral seminar, a philosophy seminar, where we were dealing with a similar question to this. But, you know, when we're talking about truth, that the absolute truth is we put it this way, A cannot be A and non-A at the same time. You can't have two different things be false and true at the same time.
That's right.
And one of the students said to the professor, no, I disagree with that. And he was kind of talking about almost like an Eastern kind of yin-yang kind of philosophy. And the professor just stopped and he said, "You're on fire. The devil is God." And he just went down this list of totally contradictory things. Mm. And the student's sitting there just like hanging his head in shame because he realized, no, two opposite things can't be the same thing and opposite at the same time.
Hmm.
And, you know, false, true, doesn't matter. There's a mixture of both. No. There's absolutes out there. And we live our life according to
this. Absolutely we do. We do. We that's the way that the world operates, and you can reject that if you want to, or try to, at least, you know, intellectually, but it's not honest intellectually to reject
that. That's a good point. Yep, good point.
Anyway, so those are some inescapable truths, and if you want to call it that, but there's some other truths that we all have to come to terms with that we're going to live with. Now, people will be dishonest about that and say, mm-hmm, well, no, those are not truths, but we all do operate on the basis of faith. We all believe that we exist and that we're here.
Yeah, that's good. And so you and I, we come out of the Christian worldview, mm-hmm, that perspective, but there are other worldviews that exist, and let's talk about those. Let's kind of break those down a little bit if we can. Christian worldview, a biggie that's really been dominant in our culture since before Charles Darwin, but it really was kind of codified by Darwin. That's naturalism.
Yep.
Is a worldview. What are two other ones?
Well, you got pantheism.
Pantheism,
which is another one. We'll explain. Mm-hmm. We can explain, you know, if we want to.
Yep.
And then a big one that I did mention a second ago is postmodernism. It's more or less a worldview. Now there have been, as you and I talked about earlier before the podcast when we were talking about this, there are people now who say that postmodernism is a dead system,
mm-hmm,
that it's a dead worldview that mm-hmm no longer really exists as a system anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand what they mean by that. Postmodernism, by its own definitions, cannot hold up and be a system. it goes against a systematic.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is the main problem with postmodernism is that it says that whatever's true for you may be true for you, but there is no absolute truth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's hard to build a system around no absolute truth.
Right.
So by its own definition, it's hard to systematize. So some have said, well, postmodernism as a system is dead. Well, probably, but it never really existed much as a system because it can't without absolute
mm-hmm
truth.
Mm-hmm. But ideas still circulate.
But they do, yeah. And they're all. Yeah. I think they're always going to circulate. The ideas that came from postmodernism, I think, will always be here because there will always be a desire on the part of sinful humanity to reject the idea that there is a God and I am accountable to him,
mm-hmm,
and that there is one truth that I need to live by.
Mm-hmm.
The human flesh is always going to reject that and try to deny that and twist that. So I think those things from postmodernism have always been around and they always will be. So anyway, that is another. We could even call that a system, a worldview system.
Yeah, that's helpful because, you know, when you start answering these questions, and that's why the A cannot be A and non-A at the same time, the same way, is a very important thing. Because if one person says the universe was created by God, and the other person says, no, it's always been, but over time it has adapted and grown, and randomly, you know, here we are, that kind of thing. Well, man, those beginning points are very, very far apart. They can't be both the same. That's and even right. though some people have tried, for example, a theistic evolutionist has tried to say that God used the process of evolution to do everything. The problem is neither theism nor naturalism would agree to that.
No.
I mean, they're both contradictory. So
that's right.
And both views know that, and they're not willing to cede any ground there. So that you can try, but it's not going
to. It's like trying to force two opposite poles of a magnet together.
Yeah.
You know, if they're weak enough, you can, by the force of your muscles, you can make them stay together, but they're constantly repelling each other. Mm-hmm. And so if you let them go, they're going to push each other away.
That's good.
So it's they just don't operate well that way. People have tried, and people come up with systems to make it try to work, but it, in my opinion, it doesn't really work. But anyway, so you got all these different, you know, worldviews, and everybody fits somewhere in some of these worldviews, or some concoction of them, but everybody's got one.
Yeah. That's good. So if we think about these kind of four major perspectives or whatever, let's answer a few of those questions to try to get at the nature of some of the things that you've raised, because I think that's a helpful, you know, let's take, for example, the world. How did we get here? The three questions you talked about. Mm-hmm. Now, how did we get here? What's wrong? And how do we fix it? Because the answer to those things are very, very important.
Absolutely.
Answer. Okay, so how did we get here? Let's talk about pantheism, Christianity, naturalism, and postmodernism.
Okay. When we talk about Christianity, our Christian theism worldview would simply say the way we got here is that God created us. We are created in the image of God. We go back to the book of Genesis and we find the creation story. That's how we got here. Mm-hmm. Where did we come from? We came from God creating the world and putting us here as human beings, created us in his image. Mm-hmm. And that says a lot about who we are then, who are identified as human beings, because we're made in his image. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to the naturalistic worldview is sort of the opposite of that, that there is no God. It's an atheistic worldview is what naturalism is.
Right.
Is that there is no God, and that the only thing that exists is nature, anything in nature. All right, so we believe as Christians God created nature, but a naturalistic worldview person would say, one who espouses that view would say that nature is the only thing that exists. So there is no higher power, there is no spiritual realm, it's just nature. It's what we can see, it's what we can put our hands on, and that kind of stuff. So the way that we got here then is by what many naturalists would say is by some kind of and some would call it the Big Bang Theory, something out there in nature sparked life. And so because of the Big Bang, and then over millions and sometimes even billions of years, we eventually evolved, and that's how we got here as human beings, from an evolution of a single-celled organism through a primordial sea of goop. Eventually something crawled out of that with legs, and we eventually evolved into human beings.
Which is just an interesting thought, isn't it? I mean, if you push all the way back to what a lot of these guys call the singularity. I mean, you keep. Where did the singularity come from?
Well, and that's the thing. That's the thing that naturalism has to answer is where did that? Mm-hmm. Even if in an argument we say, okay, you believe in a singularity, you still have to answer the question, where did that come from?
Yeah.
Well, and they would say, well, it's always been there. Mm-hmm. That's it's eternal. Nature has always been there, and it always will be. It will never. Yeah. You know, it's just always been here.
You know, this kind of raises in my mind, you know, this particular question, the issue of proofs. Okay, so, you know, can we prove according to the, you know, scientific method or whatever, you know, the Enlightenment has brought to us that God exists and that God has done this? According to those things, no. But neither can science prove empirically, going back all the way. Now, here's what you do have. The universe is very big. Mm-hmm. And according to the estimation, it's very old. I mean, it's just, you know, there you still have to do work on describing, you know, how it got there. Is it as old as it looks? You know, right. I mean, there's all kinds of tributaries that flow into this big river to answer the question. But and Christian philosophy worldview has given, you know, these kind of arguments for proof, you know, based on design, based on, you know, a whole lot of different factors. Very interesting stuff.
It is interesting stuff. And we get into, and that's another thing that worldview has to eventually answer is, what is your view of how the world get here? I mean, why is there a world here? And then what happened? Who got it here? Or what put it here? Or, you know, how did it evolve to get here? Whatever. And so your answers to that are going to flow from what you believe, you know, about the world. Mm-hmm. And so naturalism said there is no God. Therefore, if everything in nature is eternal, mm-hmm. then that's how by the process of nature is how we got here. Mm-hmm. We just evolved.
Interesting.
Now, pantheism is a different view. Pantheism is a spiritual view. It's not just a naturalistic worldview. It's a spiritual worldview, but it says that, believe it, and let me give you a big theological word. Pantheism is a view of monism, which means, meaning all is one, everything is one, mm-hmm. and that everything, that all is God. Okay, small g, small, lowercase, not small, but little, lowercase g. The lowercase g God is that everything is one, and that everything is lowercase God, okay? Which means then, basically, everything is divine, mm-hmm. Has some sort of a God source, or everything is part of that God. Everything is in that God. God is in everything, all right? Now, so there is a spiritual realm to pantheism, but at the same time, their worldview dictates that we got here by evolution. Mm-hmm. Now, they would not say that nature is eternal, or that mm-hmm. nature is God. They would just simply say that God is nature, and nature is God. Mm-hmm. But that we got here by natural processes. Mm-hmm. So we got here by evolution. So they would hold the same type thing as a naturalist would, mm-hmm. as far as, you know, the evolutionary process. But there is a spiritual realm in their view, in a mm-hmm. pantheist worldview.
Yeah.
Now, postmodernism mm-hmm. is a view that just says, yeah, we don't care.
Whatever.
Well, we don't care how we got yeah. here. I mean, what does that have to do mm-hmm. with anything? Mm-hmm. Most postmodernists would say, yeah, we probably evolved. That's probably how we got here. But, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, right, whatever. You know, who cares? Doesn't really matter how we got here. Mm-hmm. But there's a real flaw in that answer is that the problem is that if you don't know how you got here and don't want to give an answer to that, then again, you have no basis for your operating on mm-hmm. the basis of right and wrong now. Mm-hmm. Interesting. When we were at the convention, the Southern Baptist Convention, just back, I don't know, oh gosh, a month or so ago, 2 months ago, when I left, I had to catch an Uber to the airport. Mm-hmm. And so I called Uber. It's the first time I'd ever done this on my own. My wife has always done this for us, and so I had to do it on my own, and I did it wrong. And anyway, so a guy showed up, he picked me up, and I didn't know what to do. I'd never done this before, so I threw my bag in the back, and I sat in the front. Mm-hmm. And I got in. I just assumed it was okay to sit in the front. I don't know that it is or not, but it may be like a cab. You're supposed to sit in the back, but I sat in the front. And so on the way to the airport, I had about a half an hour drive, and I started talking to this guy and asking him if he, you know, is a Christian or whatever. So we got to talking, and he said, well, he basically was raised as a Christian but no longer believes in a God. Hmm. I said, well, okay, that's interesting. And so I had a great conversation with him about worldview, and that's where I started mm-hmm. in an opportunity to be able to share the gospel with him, as I started with worldview issues. And this is one of the places I started, is what we're talking about now. As I asked him about some things, he just basically is a sort of a postmodern kind of person. And I said, you know, would it be, if somebody broke into your house and stole some stuff, would that be, you know, that be okay with you? Is that wrong? And he would try to give me some things to say, well, I actually did have somebody break into my house, and I didn't press charges. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a great thing to do on his behalf. And I said, man, that's fantastic of you to do that. What if they broke into your house and killed a family member? Mm-hmm. Are you as willing to give that up without saying anything, you know, no big deal. Well, so eventually I pressed him on the issue, and he said, okay, all right, I think that would be wrong. Why? What is your mm-hmm. basis for saying that's wrong? Mm-hmm. Well, he couldn't really answer the question. He didn't have an answer for why I think it's wrong. Well, you know, society has sort of concocted the idea of what's wrong. Where did they get that from?
Yeah.
And so basically the you know, how we got here and what we believe is right and wrong, postmodernism can't really answer to those things. And they don't really care to answer to all that. They just say, well, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. I'm just going to, what's true for you may not be true for me. Mm. Right? So So with all these different worldviews, they're going to answer these questions like, who is this God? And then what about the world? Where did we come from? You know, pantheism believes in human divinity. We're all part of the divine, and the divine is part of us. Again, lowercase g, but still we're all divine, and divine mm-hmm. and divinity is in us. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I heard a sermon a couple of days ago on a radio station where I don't think the pastor actually intended this. I really don't think he did, because it was on a Christian radio station. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that he said in his sermon, he said that God has put his divinity in all of us.
Mm.
Now, I think what he meant was that we've been created in God's image. Mm-hmm. But what he said is that God has put his divinity in all of us.
Mm.
Those are two very different things.
Pretty loaded. Yeah.
Yeah, because if I believe that I'm divine, and you are divine, then we are, that's pantheism. Then we are all God, and God is us.
Right.
Now, I don't think he intended that, but that's what he said. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying that's a prevalent idea among spiritualists out there who mm-hmm. want to believe in a spiritual realm, which would be to say that, well, you know, I am divine, or I have a spark of the divine in me, or whatever, I'm made up of divinity. But that's a pantheistic worldview. So anyway, that's sort of the, you know, who is God and where did the world come from and who are we and that kind of stuff, and how these worldviews answer them.
It's like Shirley MacLaine one time said, you know, that she looked inside herself and found God and she was fierce, you know. It's just like, what are we even talking?
You know. Oh, my gosh. But, you know, that's sort of one of those things, is that you can sort of say whatever you want to say. You can have your basis, the basis of your understanding of God comes from within you. Who can argue with that, right? And so that's sort of that postmodern idea that we're living in, is that nobody can argue with that.
So then, okay, that's helpful, because, you know, the starting point a lot of times will inform direction and destination in your belief system. So that's very helpful. But something's gone wrong, okay?
Yeah.
Something,
yeah.
Obviously, you know, you look out in the world, and let's just take our own cultural construct right now of racism, and how racism in this conversation is, you know, according to some of these worldviews, you really don't have a basis to, you know, to disagree or even object to racism, according to a lot of the principles of the worldview.
Right.
But let's talk about what went wrong, and how do these particular, you know, perspectives try to get at an answer to that question.
Well, the Christian worldview obviously would say what went wrong is what Adam and Eve did. Mm-hmm. We believe in, again, Revelation, which says that Adam and Eve were put in the garden. They ate the fruit that God told them not to eat. Therefore, they had to deal with the consequences of death, and that's what went wrong with the world. Okay, so when they sinned, death entered the world, and so did decay and destruction and corruption and everything. All right, uh-huh. So they spoiled it for the rest of us, okay? So that's what went wrong. But the other worldviews are going to answer that differently. The naturalistic worldview will say that the flaws in our human nature are a result of learned responses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In other words, I'd say, go back to your example. The reason why there is racism mm-hmm. is because we are not necessarily sinful. In a naturalist worldview, there's no sense, no such thing as sin.
Right.
So we're not necessarily sinful. We've just, people have learned that.
Mm-hmm.
That's where racism comes from. So we've learned that from the past, and we got that from our parents, who got that from their parents, and so forth. And so these are learned responses, not an inward moral corruption.
Yeah.
Like we would say in Christian worldview, we inherited that from Adam and Eve, but naturalism says no. There's nothing wrong with us inherently.
Yeah,
we just learned some bad things, and so there is no such thing.
Well, it's fascinating because if you have in a naturalistic evolutionary type worldview, if only the strong survive, and one race dominates and extincts another one. I mean, who's to say that's not a part of the evolutionary process?
That's right.
And you know what I'm saying? So to argue against that, let's say, you know, Asians overtook the world. Well, what grounds would we have to object on that if their population density is higher and intelligence is higher and, you know, economic strength is higher and a variety of other things? And we're sitting here looking at, you know, people groups going away because they can't make it.
Exactly. And there is no basis for objecting to that, according to their naturalistic system. Mm-hmm. Now, every naturalist I've met is pretty prideful. Mm-hmm. I don't mean that in a bad way. I just simply mean every naturalist wants to survive, right? Whether he's the fit one to survive or not, every naturalist wants to survive. Everybody has that desire to survive, whether he is fit to survive or not,
that's right,
supposedly within their system. But in pantheism, that's more naturalism. But mm-hmm. but pantheism is this: our ethics are based on moral relativism, and this is more the postmodern type of idea.
As well,
we do. Whatever is relatively acceptable in that context or at that period of time or whatever, we do what we want to do.
Yeah,
that's what moral relativism is. Is that morality is? I was reading something last night to my folks as I was preaching on Sunday night from the Book of Proverbs, and I read a quote from a guy in a book, in a commentary on the Book of Proverbs, who says that we live in a culture of ethical weightlessness, which I think is really well worded. Ethical weightlessness. It's like within pantheism or postmodernism, it's like ethics is such a slippery thing. It's not a black and white thing. It's a sort of a gray thing, and it doesn't really matter. You do sort of what you want to do and whatever is true for you. So anyway, that's how we make decisions, is again, but the idea behind that is that we're not inherently corrupt, morally speaking, is that we make, you know, bad decisions and we need to make better decisions. So anyway, and again, postmodernism again would say, well, who cares? I mean, it's that's the way it is, and so we're going to deal with that. And people know that I hate this saying, but because I think it has, I don't know, maybe I'm an idiot, but I think I can say this because I just don't like it. But the saying that it is what it is, that's sort of a postmodern type of thing. It is what it is. I don't mean that everybody says that as a postmodernist, but I just hate that because my family knows every time that's said, it is what it is. My reaction to that is it now? What else would it be? If it is not what it is, what else would it be, right?
How
redundant is that? But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But anyway, so postmodernism basically doesn't really care about why things went wrong or what's gone wrong. They would basically say, well, nothing's wrong necessarily, because what's happened in the past, it just happened. And so no big deal, you know. So then you have to answer the question, which I know is next, how do you fix all that?
Well, the Christian
worldview obviously said Jesus comes to fix that, right? Now, the other systems are going to answer that differently. The naturalistic worldview
It'll kind of fix itself, won't it?
Well, and you have science to do that. We're gonna fix it. Which is what we're trying to do now, right? And my brother-in-law and I were talking about this the other day too. That one of the things that we can say about our generation that we're living in now is that the people today are living much longer than they ever have globally, right? Yeah. People are living longer lives than they ever have. And he made the good point when we were talking about this. He said, but now people have cancer more than they ever have. And his point was, we're living longer, therefore we're living long enough to get cancer. So we're constantly, our world is constantly naturalistically saying that science is going to fix this, but we're finding out science can't fix that. Science maybe have gotten us to live longer lives, but science is not making any headway against cancer because we seem to be losing more and more people to cancer than we ever have.
Yeah, it's two-edged sword, isn't it? I mean, you've got the race to find a cure for cancer, but then you've got take, for example, Down syndrome, which is a chromosomal mm-hmm. you know, issue. They might argue that, well, nature has messed that up, and then therefore it's okay to abort Down syndrome right. babies in the womb
right.
because it's a mistake of naturalism or something
right.
like that.
That's right.
Well, that's a very moral question, isn't it?
It is.
And so you could try to argue on the basis of a worldview that comes from just a natural perspective, but we're really talking about human beings here, you know? And man, I just think, you know, the stakes are really high when we start talking about the authority of science to provide these kinds of answers to questions that are actually moral yeah. in content. Yeah.
And what if we try to fix a problem with a person and we actually make it worse?
Make it worse. Yeah.
Then what do we do? Mm-hmm. If we fail to do that, then mm-hmm. what do we do? Mm-hmm. Well, we can annihilate that person. Mm-hmm. Right? We can take that person out. We tried to fix the person, we made it worse, and now we're responsible, and so we can do whatever we want to do. So we annihilate the person. You know, same thing with abortion and all this kind of stuff. We have a problem, and so now we can fix it.
Yeah.
We can annihilate the person. We can kill the baby. We can, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, of course, part of the worldview is, you know, is humanity special? You know, in this kind of thing, Christianity would say, yes, we're creating the image of God, got value, dignity, those kind of things. But in a naturalistic worldview, we're just an animal like everything else.
That's right.
And so, you know, why prioritize humanity? And that's why you have, like, environmentalists that are going crazy about, you know, humans destroying the earth, and that's why we'll spend billions of dollars on saving the whales and some rare bird in a rainforest or something, mm-hmm. but, you know, slaughtering babies is not...
It's exactly
you know what
right.
I'm saying? It's just, it's upside down.
Well, science, in a naturalistic worldview, has no moral guidelines for experimenting with science. Mm-hmm. In other words, so right now, you know, one of the things in our scientific world that we're dealing with right now is being able to genetically alter a baby, right? I want a boy, all right? My wife and I, we want a boy. So we have the desire to have a boy, so we're going to genetically alter this embryo to make it a boy. Mm-hmm. Well, naturalistic science has no more guidelines that controls their experimentation of that. And so, okay, so let's experiment with it. Let's try to make a boy. Mm-hmm. And then when that experiment goes wrong, and we've now created a mutation in this baby, it's okay, no big deal, we just do away with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, so now we're creating these problems, and we have no moral, ethical boundaries or guidelines by which then to decide whether or not should we keep that, should we not keep that. Now, again, we go back to the survival mm-hmm. of the fittest. No, that one's a bad one. Let's call that one yeah. and let's start all over. So there is no ground. There are no grounds morally for experimenting.
Yeah.
And doing all kinds of weird things. Right.
Yeah.
Well, this was the idea behind what Hitler did.
Right.
Hitler had no moral basis or ethics for doing what he did, so he experimented in all kinds of ways with people and how to kill people and how to do all kinds of weird things and because he had no moral background or he had no moral foundation. He was living as a naturalist.
Well, is postmodernism trying to answer this kind of question of, and pantheism too, I guess, you know, how to fix it? I mean, is it even on the radar in terms of something that's necessary?
Well, with postmodernism, that's a good question. I guess, I guess postmodernism sort of looks at the way things are right now, and we're very pragmatic mm-hmm. when it comes to postmodernism. Mm-hmm. You just do whatever
it works.
Mm-hmm. You know, you go at it, and if it works, great. If it doesn't work, you try something else.
Yeah.
You know, and so as long as it's acceptable for the community, because there is no right or wrong. So as long as it's acceptable, then we're okay with that.
Hey, it is what it is, right? It is what it is.
We just do whatever.
Well, pantheism, you know, to me, as you talk about pantheism, and as I've read on this a little bit too, it's got kind of an undercurrent of like Eastern religion, almost like like a Hinduism type to it. Because you talk about, you know, history being cyclical, and
that's right.
You know, afterlife being kind of reincarnated, karma kind of, we're all part of the divinity. We're going to get recycled through it, that kind of stuff.
That's right.
That's a very Eastern perspective.
It is. This idea we're going to cycle back through reincarnation, so we're going to end up being something else, and we're never going to be able to get out of this life. You know, so keep circling.
As this came across Facebook the other day, it was a picture of an article, a picture, and an article had shown up in a newspaper in Australia, and the caption was something like, "Pig, you know, pig steals a 12-pack of beer, gets drunk, and kills a something anyway." And the guy tweeted it, and he said, "See, Grandpa was reincarnated as a pig," or something like that. Got drunk, broke into a party, and killed something. And I just thought, yeah.
Gosh.
I mean, he was being humorous, but, man, some people might actually think that
way. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Well, with all these different worldviews, you end up with all kinds of stuff. And as I said earlier, some people might live with a try to live with a concoction of these different worldviews put together. In other words, there will be people who will say, "I believe in a God."
Yeah.
But I also believe in evolution.
So you said, it's a great point, because you said in the beginning that a worldview is meant to be kind of a coherent, consistent system that fits together. Problem is, a lot of people are putting a hodgepodge of pieces together to try to answer these ultimate questions that Ronald Nash talks about, life's ultimate questions. And oftentimes they haven't really thought it through whether or not it's consistent, and maybe they not even care.
Right. And that's where everybody needs to try to answer these questions. Can you answer these questions with your worldview? And if you cannot answer these questions consistently, meaning that your answers don't all disagree with each other, then you don't have a consistent worldview. And so these questions are really good to be able to evaluate your worldview. Now, we would say as Christian theists that we believe that that God's revelation has given us the answers, the coherent, consistent answers to all of these questions.
Oh, so I'm sorry, I misspoke. I just pulled this up on Twitter. I said, "Pig in Australia steals 18 beers from campers, gets drunk, fights cow." And the guy said, "Great news. Granddad has been reincarnated as an Australian boar."
That's hilarious. Anyway, I'm sorry, man. No, that's hilarious. We got to get our facts straight.
Exactly. Right? Exactly right.
I don't want to misquote somebody on Twitter.
Yeah. And, of course, we're dancing around, you know, just kind of scratching the surface, really, on the iceberg of what worldview and worldview analysis looks like.
Yeah.
But, you know, the point is, we think a certain way because we've received truth.
That's right.
Revealed from God about the world, about who we are, about what went wrong, about how to fix it. And, you know, we're kind of resting on that foundation of revealed scripture. Whereas some of the other worldviews are resting on science or resting on experience or perspective or something like that from their own, you know, mind or whatever. And so you could see how these create tension the time when you're talking with people.
Well, and if God is the one who did create us, and then God is the one who revealed these things to us, then we believe that we are automatically accountable to that God.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Naturalism would say there is no God, so we're not accountable. We make up the rules. But we would say, as Christian theists, no, God did this, and so we are automatically accountable.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, in understanding worldview, the point is that everybody has one.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever yours is made up of, if you've concocted it from, you know, different ones to try to put it together, but whatever your worldview is, it needs to be consistent. It needs to be able to answer these questions.
Yeah,
that are very critical questions that we've always been asking. Why are we here? Why do we know something instead of nothing?
Yeah.
What's going to happen after we die? You know, your worldview needs to answer these questions.
Yeah, yeah. Just recently, with a family member who's of a kind of different religious perspective, and you know, it's interesting in the kind of the description of their church or whatever, they just come out and say, "We do not believe that authority comes from a person or a book or something like that. We believe that personal experience is the authority." To which I thought, well, you just said you don't believe in authority from a person. Are you a person? Then how are you you know, in other words, you want to feel acceptance and you want to be able to believe what you want to believe and live your life as you want to live your life. And they're trying to ground it with a worldview that makes sense, but ultimately it doesn't make sense, you know, because there are contradictory things. It's okay to believe what you believe unless you tell me what you believe is contradictory to what I believe.
That's exactly right.
You know?
Yeah.
That's the rub.
Well, and at the bottom line, everything is at stake in this.
Yeah.
If Christianity is true, then it's not just a matter of what we believe at church or what we've just always been told at home. It's a truth about reality. If Christianity is true,
yeah.
God is the creator. God has revealed himself. Mm-hmm. God came to save us, and that Jesus is the only way. If Christianity is true, then everything is about, everything is at stake. This is not just philosophy. This is about reality. This is
right.
about what is ultimately real.
Right.
And everybody has to answer those questions because it's about what's real.
Hmm. Man, I've enjoyed this. I mean, it. You know, I don't always get to really kind of break it down and think through these categories.
Yeah.
But so, so very, very helpful, man. I really appreciate you leading us through this conversation. And look, we might touch on some of this more in an episode down the road and kind of dig and drill down a little bit deeper. But, man, good stuff. Well, let's kind of pull this to a close. Thanks, Matt, for leading us through that. You know, I think about worldview, and we do a segment every now and then called Headlines. And usually we appeal to, like, something that's come across in the news cycle or whatever else that is relevant to our denomination or to our faith or just something that touches actually on one of these questions, morality, humanity, stuff like that. And you and I talked about this before the show. Instead of like a specific news item, we kind of want to raise the website and really a portal through which to think through worldview questions at albertmoeller.com. Now, the reason why we talk about him, he's got this show called The Briefing. And he's on a hiatus for this month, but he'll come back in August and redo it for the rest, you know, next year. But what Moeller does, unlike anybody else that I'm listening to, and you can get his podcast or you can listen through the website, albertmoeller.com, is that he's looking at news cycle, he's looking at politics, he's looking at moral questions, and he's bringing it into a discussion, and he's addressing it through a Christian worldview. And a lot of times, you know, Dr. Moeller obviously is smarter than all of us put together, and I get that. But, man, nobody else is kind of – I'm not sitting around, you know, combing through the news cycle and applying these questions, these categories to these particular issues. And I just – and you and I agreed, you know, if we could point our listeners out to a different – you know, a different portal where you can hear about this, you can think through this for yourself with someone who's a trustworthy guide to be applying worldview thinking to the news of our day, man. Go check Moeller out because he's doing some good stuff.
Yeah, he reads, and we're not getting paid for this endorsement.
Right.
We're just thinking through worldview issues and just trying to point you to the right place, a good place.
Yeah.
But dude can read an article in any publication.
Yeah.
And draw out from there some of the greatest worldview applications.
Yeah,
you just think, dude, that was just an article on you know, babies in Australia being. And you just think, where'd you get? But anyway, but he can do that very well, and he helps you to think through some issues from a Christian worldview.
Yeah, and
he's
reading all this stuff that I don't read the Washington Post every day or New York Times or. You know, the London Gazette or whatever it is, but I don't know, man. He's just reading it all the time,
every time.
Yep. You know, and so that's helpful, and I'm interested in it. I don't listen to it every day, but when I get a chance, if I'm mowing the yard or running or, you know, driving or something, I'll put them on, and usually I'm very thankful for it because I'm thinking, man, I would have not heard this kind of analysis anywhere else.
And I wouldn't have thought about that on my own.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have come to those conclusions on my own.
Yeah, so thanks for listening to us today on the Worldview Conversation of the Gospel Rain Podcast. We're so glad that you take the time to listen to us, and we'll see you back next time. We jump into another gospel-centered conversation around things that really matter.
Thank you for joining us for the Gospel Rain Podcast. We hope you've been encouraged today, and we pray the gospel will reign in your life this week. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or check out our website at gospelrain.com.